Now, a recent report drawn up by the former Secretary General of the European Commission, Dr. Catherine Day, has recommended a number of changes to Ireland's asylum seeker system. Among them is the introduction of vulnerability assessments, which would detect people who have been tortured in their home countries. Spirazi is the sole dedicated service for victims of torture who come to Ireland. It's estimated that just 10% of people who have suffered torture and arrive in Ireland access their services. And we find out about Spirazi when we spoke to Claire Dunn, who's a teacher, or not a teacher, a doctor. And she's working in a refugee camp, and she told us that she used to work with Spirazi. I'd never heard of it before. We're joined on the line now by Chief Executive of Spirazi, Rory Halpin. How are you doing, Rory?
How you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you. And Cheribu.
Great to talk to you this afternoon.
Cheribu, who's originally from Uganda and came here 20 years ago and has used Spirazi's services. How are you doing, Cheribu?
I'm okay. Thanks.
Thank you both for joining us today. I suppose I'll go to you, Rory, first. There's a slight delay on your line, so we'll try and deal with that. Just tell us about Spirazi, how it came about and what its mission statement is, I suppose.
Yeah, sure, Ray. And thanks for this opportunity. Spirazi was founded in 1999. I don't know if you remember that there was an initial influx of many asylum seekers at that stage into the country. If you look back at the figures, I was just checking it there, in 1993, something like 36 people arrived into the country. But by 1998, 1999, that number had risen to about 4,000 or 5,000. So everybody was kind of scrambling to kind of deal with this influx, including government and non-government agencies. So the Spiritans, who founded Spirazi, they did their own bit of thinking around it and decided, well, maybe we'll offer initially a kind of a place of welcome, which they did on, and which is our place where we work for 210 North Circular Road. And then, because of their interest in education, the Spiritans said, well, okay, well, why don't we offer English language classes? Because that seems to be an obvious help for people coming into the country who don't speak the language. But the interesting thing is, when they began the classes, they realized that many of the students were just incapable of taking on board what was being taught. And that on closer examination, they realized that people had been, some of the people anyway in the class, had been severely traumatized and in fact were victims of torture. So that kind of shifted, the response shifted as a result of that. While hanging on to the English language piece, they began to look at, well, how can we respond to this, tragedy that's kind of in front of our very eyes here? And move very quickly then to providing medical support through doctors and therapists and eventually psychosocial support. And I suppose that kind of mirrored the understanding of torture and how deeply impactful it was on the person, you know, that every aspect of the person is affected by torture. And so a holistic approach was what was required, you know, to deal with the physical, the psychological, the social, and indeed the spiritual, that, you know, those kind of wider questions of what the meaning of life is around. So everything is affected by this torture. Okay. So over the period of, I suppose, 20, 21 years now, we have seen over 5,000 victims of torture. And that's where we are today.
Cheribu is one of them. Cheribu, so yeah. 20 years ago, you arrived in Ireland. Why did you pick Ireland?
I actually didn't pick Ireland. It's some of my friends I used to work with who picked for me Ireland.
Okay. And did you know anything about Ireland?
I knew what I had been taught at school, like geographically and historically.
Right.
And then because I was a Catholic, so I knew Ireland was a Catholic country.
In talking to people who come here as asylum seekers, I'm always interested to know how bad things were at home to make them flee their country and leave their loved ones behind. So you lost your husband. How did he die?
My husband was shot, actually, in front of all of us.
Right.
And that kind of, like, put me in a very kind of tight position.
Yeah. And when you say in front of all of us, that all of you, the family.
My family.
Yes. How many children have you got, Cheribu?
I have 6 children.
Right. Okay.
four boys and two girls.
So that's a horrific thing to happen if you're a child, to see your father shot dead, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's very traumatic. Like, I couldn't believe it, like, myself.
Yes, yes.
Like, when you think back, it was terrible to watch something like that, especially with your children.
Yes, and why was he murdered?
His family had been involved in the politics of Uganda.
Mm.
And when that government was taken off, so the family that is there is kind of targeted. You are deemed to be helping those who are opposed to the government,
yes,
even though you are not. But just the mere fact that you had been, some of your relatives had been like in government holding big jobs.
Yes.
Those who stayed back were supposed to, like, they were kind of deemed
to be opposing the government.
And
I suppose because you were then married to your husband, the same could be said of you. You were seen as opposing the government as well.
Yeah, and I was working with a British company, so I was kind of deemed connected to the international organizations.
So did you fear for your own life, Cherubu?
So things like that, like you are one of the people, even though you didn't do anything, like you are supposed to kind of be mobilizing people against the government.
Hmm. Can you tell me when it came to the point where you knew you had to leave?
I had been asked, like, to go and report for questioning a few times. And my office mates kind of thought it was dangerous. And they kind of talked to me that it would probably be better for you to leave. So the children have one parent alive.
Mm.
You have lost your husband already, just for the sake of your children. Because it was hard for me. My children were young then. Like, just to leave them there was hard as a mother. Like,
of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did they ever bring you in for questioning, Cherubu?
They brought me a few times. And there, when they mean questioning, it is kind of torture.
Right.
Because they have to make you talk. And as you know, women, the only way to make a woman talk is to break her spiritually by maybe rape and all that. So that's the only thing that will make you feel bad about yourself. Lower your self-esteem. And maybe, like, because if they threaten your family or your children, you are going to talk.
Yes.
That's how they break your spirit.
So how long did these bouts of questioning last for you?
It depends on who is really handling you. We have in Uganda what they called safe houses. Safe houses means underground torture chambers.
Right.
So if you are taken there, your family will not know where you are. Because most of the time you are taken there blindfolded. And it's like homes, like they have prepared for this kind of questioning. Such that you are isolated, even if you shouted, nobody will hear you. Or sometimes you're in the basement.
Horrific. And it's ongoing. I was just reading there that 45 people were killed in Uganda last week.
You make noise.
Yes, and that's fine. That's fine.
So those safe houses is where so many people are tortured.
Yes.
And killed.
So when you arrived to Ireland, this was, you know, this had affected you. So you were suffering probably from PTSD, post-traumatic stress, having witnessed your husband been killed a number of years previously, have been brought in for questioning and all that. So how was it affecting your mental health?
Mm. When I came here, the separation from your children and your family and the world you knew, it is kind of like a grief.
Yes.
So isolation here triggered depression in me. Because I eventually realized that I was really alone. And it felt like you had died. You know, like the way you can sometimes have those dreams that you are in heaven and you are looking down on your family and seeing how they are suffering. It was that kind of effect that I was here safe, but my children, I didn't know what was going on with them there. Because when you call home, people try to, like, so that you are not worried, they say everything is okay. But when you call the children, you can tell that they are afraid to say things. They had probably been warned not to worry you.
Yes.
But as a mother, you can sense fear in them that they cannot talk. You know? So that is very hard.
Yes.
And so I think that is what triggered depression in me and brought up all the trauma I had been. Because in Uganda, there's no counseling services. Despite all these traumatic situations there, you don't get help, like to talk to somebody, or you have to deal with that yourself. And me being the head of the family, I had to be strong for everybody. I never really had the time to grieve.
No. Very difficult. And I believe you went silent. You didn't talk to anybody.
Yeah, like after my husband was killed, after the burial, like when I realized he was really dead, I could not talk, like for a year. I was just walking.
Yeah. Rory, I'll bring you back in now. Is Rory there?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. To the children, maybe.
Yeah. I'm just going to talk to Rory for a minute, Cheribu.
So it was, I don't know what happened to me.
Yeah.
Like to silence me. It just came automatically by itself.
No, but that'd be a symptom.
Like that I could not talk.
That'd be a symptom of post-traumatic stress, wouldn't it, Rory?
Exactly, Ray. Yeah. Yeah. What Cheribu is describing there, flashbacks, insomnia, nightmares, depression, anxiety. I mean, and that just, it's that way, that's the body's way of dealing with the trauma or not, as the case may be. So yeah, perfectly describing very graphically and movingly what happened to her over in Uganda 20 years ago now. Yeah. Mm.
So I just said in the intro that just 10% of people who have suffered torture and arrive in Ireland access their services. So what numbers are we talking about? 10% of what?
Okay, well, yeah, 10% of, well, I mean, I was just looking at the figures last year. There was over 3,500 people came into the country last year. So that's approximately 350 people that we would have seen out of that group last year. Not even that, in fact, I was checking the figures that we didn't even see that number of people. But it's still a huge number of people being referred in for trauma therapy, for being victims of torture. And that's it's a kind of a bit of a tragedy in itself. And that's why when you mentioned that there should be a vulnerability assessment right at the start, that's what we've been advocating for many years now. What the government has committed itself to, but still hasn't managed to put in place. But we are hopeful that it will happen soon. But that will identify particularly, well, a whole range of vulnerabilities, but particularly victims of torture. And so that the sooner people are identified, the sooner they can get the
treatment,
the supports they need.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cheribu, four of your family are now living in Ireland.
No, four of my children are living here, but my first two are in Uganda.
Okay. And you must fear for them because, as I was saying, there's unrest ongoing. Bobby Wine, who was a presidential candidate, was arrested and people took to the streets to protest last week and 45 people were killed.
Yeah, there is like a worry because my daughter, like on the day that Bobby Wine was arrested and people rioting, her house, because she deals with kind of human rights there as well, so she would be vocal.
Yes.
Yeah, like advocating for women rights and all that. So they know where she lives.
And what happened to her?
A tear gas canister was thrown into her house. And there are young children there. The youngest is only 3 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And how
so
are
when
you,
things like that.
Yeah, that's worrying. How are you, Cheribu, now? It's 20 years on. You're in Ireland. How are you? How is your day-to-day life?
It's okay. Like when you come here, like you try to give back to the society that helped you.
Mm.
That's what I'm trying because Piracy really helped me. All the therapy I got, they kind of helped me to recover. So I'm trying like to give back to them and help them create awareness of their service because they do help. And there are so many people who haven't got this service. So we are trying to make it known to the people that we need help. There are so many people waiting. The waiting list is very long.
Yes. Spirazi, S-P-I-R-A-S-I, if people want to help. Spirazi, if you put that into Google. And Cheribou, you and some of your friends have found solace in dance. Talk to me about, you found solace, you found help in dancing.
Yeah, we did find solace in dancing because after I was like in Spirazi for 2.5 years counseling. But the list was growing like long and like, people are waiting. So Spirazi said they had to face us out. But we were kind of frightened to go out and go where and what support and all that. Then they asked us to come with something that could help us. And we thought of various things. Then I suggested dance. Because in dancing, we can talk with our bodies. Like in contemporary dancing, you don't have to tell your story to anybody to relieve the trauma. So we used to tell our stories through our dancing, like our bodies move, the movements.
Yeah.
So that's helped us. Initially, we were 15 people who started it in 2003. And we were all from different countries like Iran, Iraq, all those areas that people were tortured and people, the wars had affected people. And we are still like going with that group up to now through the Irish Modern Dance Theatre.
Great. When all this is over, Cheribou, you might come in and we'll have a longer chat about your story.
Yeah,
I'd love to meet you in person.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time out to talk to us today, Cheribou and Rory Halpin, Chief Executive of Spirazi, S-P-I-R-A-S-I. Thank you for taking time out to talk to us today as well. Thanks, Rory. Thanks, Cheribou.
Thank
you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.